Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we're back. We want to thank the mayor of Brockton, Bill Coppinger, for stopping in. Definitely a pleasant surprise. Good to have him here and chatting about some of the things that are going on in that community. And we like having different folks from the community in here. That's why Peter Brown is here. Peter Brown, one of our fantastic sponsors.
Thank you for having me.
How is the evening going so far, Peter?
This is excellent. I'm learning a lot and doing
it. But ask more questions, Peter. Peter, you know, when the microphones are off, Peter is...
The mayor had it. He had it dead on. There wasn't anything I could ask. He was doing a great job by himself. So.
Hey, just a quick note before we go anywhere. We got actually a new show coming up. I think it's a new show. Veterans Voice, starting on April 23rd. You can hear it here every Wednesday from 7:30 to 8:30. And we want to give them a quick plug. And I guess the show is going to discuss topics such as careers, housing and family services, education, the GI Bill, government benefits, women's veterans issues, stories from veterans. If you are interested in being a part of this program, I think Greg Brasso is the guy you want to contact, 781-985-1551. That plug came, he gave me his flyer, he's kind of hanging out, and I wanted to be cool to another show and let them know that we support them. And we support folks who want to come in here and they want to talk about things. Is that right, Peter?
Yes.
Do you want to have the first question to the gubernatorial candidate, Joe Avalon?
Thank you. Thanks for coming tonight.
Thank you, Peter. And Kevin, it's great to see you again, as always.
Good to see you. And again, we are concentrating our conversation. And that was I liked the good crossover.
Yeah.
As it was important to have, a mayor of one of the biggest communities on the South Shore. And, the one city in Plymouth County that, he knows what's going on and some of the problems that he sees in his city. And before he was elected mayor, he has seen it and he knows it. And just having the kind of the crossover, I thought it was kind of a cool thing. So I thank both of you.
It was very good. And I was pleased to be here. And I do think he's, I appreciate his firm resolve and his commitment to dealing not only with the potential issues they've got right now with their homicides, but also with the drug issue going forward.
Well, that's one of the things I was going to ask you about, because as a business owner, the hottest thing with us is like workman's comp, and when somebody goes out hurt, the first thing they're prescribed is either Percocet or Oxycontin. And we've seen it as a business owner, how the employees get hooked to this stuff.
Mm.
And the root issue, my personal opinion, is the root issue is to get rid of it and find something that's not addictive.
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, the crisis that we're experiencing with these overdoses is just the tip of a very large iceberg that really is happening all over the state, which is why it's become a big issue for me and my campaign, and why I've advocated for a whole set of things that I'm putting under the rubric of Office of Recovery. But to your point, we've had a 300% increase in the prescribing of these drugs over 15 years, and a 300% increase in overdoses and deaths due to opiate addiction. There's no question that there is way too much availability of these very powerful oral narcotic drugs. And I do want to come back to how we're going to deal with it all, but certainly at the root cause is, at some level, is the prescribing habits.
Right.
And I can't tell you, having been around the state now in 130 communities, how many people, as we talk about this issue, say, I went in for a wisdom tooth and I got 20 Oxycontins and I didn't even want to take one. So I put it in my medicine cabinet and I thought that was the right thing to do. Well, of course, it was way too much to be prescribed. They were right to be a little worried about the potential of it, but they shouldn't have let it sit there in their. So a big part of how all this happens is diversion.
Right.
By kids who use it recreationally or had it with sports injuries, who then very quickly can become addicted to these very powerful narcotics.
Well, the other thing, too, is where they get the first prescription, and then they go, the doctor fills it a couple of times, the doctor stops, and then they go to get a new primary care that fills it again.
So it's a doctor shopping. So I would say that the amount of so-called doctor shopping and also the amount of actual willful overprescribing by doctors is not that high in our state. There are some other states where it is. I think Florida has really got a big problem
right
that way. I think what we've got is a situation where the medical community generally needs kind of a to focus on a re-education effort around pain control and recognize the other side of this, which is the addiction potential. And I as a physician myself, I know that that is what we really need. But we also have to make sure that people who then have these prescriptions recognize that having them sitting around is also a huge problem.
Right.
The vast majority of how the either Percocet, Vicodin, or OxyContin gets used by kids is diversion from it from their parents or from their and they're having it at such a young age. They think, well, my parents take this. Well, how bad could it be? Mm. It can be very bad.
I have to kind of ask you, is you've had a chance to see what some of our leaders on the federal level have had to say. Do you feel confident that if you are elected, that you're gonna be able to get the support of the legislative group that's supporting us down in Washington D.C. that they're gonna be able to get money for us to educate and fight this battle?
Yeah, absolutely. I think two things. There's a lot that we need to do in the state ourselves, but let's just start with the federal level. The FDA, I think if we get, and I will pull the six governors together and the 21-member congressional delegation, that's a pretty powerful group that can push hard and make its weight felt in Washington and with the FDA to push them to make sure that they're approving drugs with a higher safety profile than what has happened here. Certainly the one with Zohydro was a decision that went against their own advisory committee. Mm. And obviously it's able to be tampered with, and that creates a very dangerous situation. So Governor Patrick had it right on the common sense facts, and maybe he had an issue with the jurisdiction, but I still think we have to be very aggressive. And I tell you, if the six of us get together, other states will join in, and this would be the tipping point. So going back to your original question, Peter, about what we need to push for, we need to push for safer drugs. And
right.
Believe me, I don't think it's past our biotech industry and even our pharmaceutical industry to develop drugs that meet a new need. Well, the new need is safety. We need to be we need pain control that's more safe than these current oral narcotics, and I absolutely believe that's within our realm. We develop lots of other kinds of drugs.
But OxyContin was supposed to, I mean, if I'm correct, and when it was initially put out there on the market and something to use, it was supposed to be a pain reliever that had kind of a time release to it where it would be able to relieve someone of pain for, you know, up to 12 to 14 hours. It was that once it was broken down that you know, the addicts were able to kind of find, you know,
that they were able to tamper with it in a way that they could snort it, et cetera, or, you know, break it down into a powder. So I think that's the issue with Zohydro. Same thing. The issue was a powerful pain control drug that would be for people who are in continuous pain, and there are some people with cancer and some other conditions who need that.
Right.
But they didn't make it in a tamper-resistant formulation,
right.
And that's the big mistake with that drug.
And then one of the things you were talking about was education, as far as the children go, or the young teenagers that are grabbing it from their parents.
Yeah.
And that's where money should be coming in to get education to the kids, or some place for them to go after school. Like, I'm on the board for the Boys and Girls Club in Plymouth, and we're just building a teen center now for them. And we try to educate them as far as drugs or keeping themselves busy, getting their GEDs and staying in school. And how are you going to address that?
Well, I think that's a part of it. But let me talk about the broader picture.
Yeah.
I think the next governor, as a very high priority, has to change things dramatically with how we deal with this. And that's one element of it. But instead of incremental changes in the law to add a few things here or provide some more money there, it has to be a complete rethink. And I think this latest epidemic has just shown us that. And the first is, the mayor was alluding, we have to stop putting people in jail. We have about 12,000 people in our county jails across the Commonwealth. At least in the Suffolk County jail system, I don't think it's any different. About, they're on there an average a year, and certainly the males are. That's $46,000 a year. They are, just as he was saying, about 80% are there for some kind of a drug-related problem. A lot of it, a vast majority of them, related to their own addiction. So it's either small non-violent activity to feed their habit to get the money, or possession themselves, et cetera. And they sit in there, they don't get appropriate treatment, really not designed for that. Then they go back into a cycle of addiction and recidivation. So this is an enormous amount of money we're spending in a completely ineffective way that's also shattering the lives of these young people. And if instead we took the same money and created much more capacity, which is what we have to do in our system for effective treatment in our mental health and substance abuse system. So more detox beds, more rehab centers, more sober houses, the whole, what's called the continuum of care for long-term effective therapy. That's a big shift in money. And the way to make that shift is also what the mayor was alluding to, which is many more drug courts. So we have 21 in the Commonwealth. We need 50, and we need one in every major jurisdiction, including Brockton. And that would essentially be the vehicle by which people aren't going into jail, but instead are going into monitored treatment in which they complete the longer-term treatment that's necessary. But even with that, and that's a big change, so a governor would have to push that hard to make those two things happen. We also need to change the insurance rules. We're going to need to pass a law to change the insurance rules, because right now, too many of our insurers, including, I would say, MassHealth, offer kind of authorizations for various parts of the treatment. And that what happens is, according to all the families that deal with this, is people get approval for, you know, 7 days of detox, which probably isn't enough. Then they don't necessarily get the approval for the next. Well, they just go back into addiction. So they've just wasted all the time and effort. It certainly haven't helped the person who's dealing with addiction yet. And if they just actually approve the right kind of treatment in the first place, once again, their health care costs would be lower. There wouldn't be all the emergency room visits, all the other illnesses that go along with this. So that's another major initiative. All of these things have to be done as a high priority, and that's why I've called for this Office of Recovery high in Health and Human Services, and it'll be a major focus of my administration.
Again, we are speaking with Democratic gubernatorial candidate Joe Avalone, who was kind enough to kind of hang and talk about this issue specifically. Well, I know you have such a great campaign out there telling folks why they should choose you. You know, thought you would come down and talk about this one major issue, and it's fantastic. Yeah. I believe Joe has a question.
Yeah, two really. You know, you mentioned how we need to have more of these recovery centers rather than having, you know, putting people in jail. Do you think that as we go forward in time, whether it be your administration, should you be elected, or any administration in the state of Massachusetts, do you think that there is a trend that will eventually go that direction, or do you see kind of there needs to be a trend set for going that direction?
It's the latter, and I'll tell you why. This is big change, and also, even though it effectively pays for itself, it's still a big mind shift. And,
sure.
And in order to get that done politically, we need a governor who is going to be the champion for calling this a health issue as opposed to a criminal issue. And the problem is, it's got a stigma. We all know that
sure.
It does. And certainly it did years ago, in which people thought of it as a moral failing problem or a parental issue or something, anything else except a disease. It's a disease.
Mm.
And I think it's going to take the next governor to keep calling that every day. This is a disease. This is a health issue. This is like having any other major health issue. And we have to think of it that way. If we carry this stigma around, it's going to be very hard to pass the laws we need to do everything we just talked
sure.
about.
Sure. And so I guess that kind of goes into my next question, which is, you know, people will come out of these out of jails and, like you mentioned, get back into the addiction cycle. Do you think that's one of the reasons we see these stronger prescriptions like the Zohydro, because we're actually forcing ourselves to become immune to the or dumb down the effects of drugs that exist already? Or do you think that's more of a pharmaceutical piece just to generate new revenue for the pharmaceutical companies?
Yeah, I think it's the latter, but I wouldn't, and yes, it does, but I wouldn't say it quite that way. I think they're looking
okay.
for new markets and their new problems to solve, but
sure.
I don't think they're weighing the cost or the potential for this addiction well enough.
Sure.
And that's what the FDA should be doing.
Sure.
You know, they could
yeah.
come up with all kinds of potential ideas for new drugs, but the FDA should be the one that should be making the careful judgment as to whether the benefits really outweigh the costs here, and they don't in this case.
I want to say, you were talking about as far as the folks when they get up, could there be some kind of a program? You look at recovery high schools. And the whole concept of recovery's high school is when an individual comes out of a rehabilitation center, instead of them going back to where they would basically go back into where they could be exposed to, you know, the same element, they're in a situation where there are folks who, you know, have dealt with the same addiction, same problems, and will be able to help them kind of go through the things that you will when you're recovering, whether you're having a down day and you're on the cusp of maybe, you know, doing something or wanting to use, and that you have somebody who's there who can kind of counsel you and talk you down from that. Do you think there should be some kind of a program? Would your administration look at some kind of a program that is like the recovery high school, but yet for somebody who is maybe beyond the age of 25 or 30?
Absolutely. I think first of all, this is a very, very difficult issue, and it isn't easily cured. And it does take people changing their life and in many ways living in a community of people that they're surrounded with that are also trying to make sure that they don't have enabling behavior or all the other behaviors that would send them back into addiction. So I think recovery high schools can be a very good thing for some of the younger people who actually would need that, and also environments for adults as well. I have relatives that I think are sober now, both sides of my family. But it's, you know, I think they have to be very structured in their lives. They have to be very careful with the job they have, the people they associate with, et cetera, and that is really making it possible. So this is a longer-term effort for many people, and we have to help support their ability to find their way back and then stay back.
Either one of you, Peter?
Well, one of the things what about the medical community when they do prescribe that drug, when the person is done with the drug, isn't there kind of some kind of education that the doctors can give to them and how to bring them down from it when they leave the treatment? Because that's the issue. They get the prescription and they leave the doctor's office and then they fend for themselves. And even though they're educated.
But I think there has to be some kind of,
to bring them up.
I almost kind of get where you know, a society where you have to hold someone's hand all the way through. There has to be a little bit of self-policing. Or at least, you know, if somebody is on the verge they have an addiction problem.
Oh, I totally agree. But you give them a drug that affects their brain, and it's not something that, you know, that they can control. And certain people don't have that effect.
I think what the physicians will need to do is monitor their pain control more closely, which is instead of giving 30 pills. Unfortunately, it's more interaction, but that is just the reality of it, is they give fewer pills, check in on them more frequently, and then, you know, depending on what their needs are, would go from there. But I think what's happening now is because the system is so geared to seeing people very quickly and trying to deal with them with pills, that we're over-prescribing. And we need more careful prescribing and monitoring it more carefully.
Yeah, I think that goes back to the earlier discussion about the number of pills actually out there, you know, limiting that. At least from my perspective, limiting that number of actual pills out on the street. So, you know, per se, like Peter earlier, you mentioned, you know, not giving 20 pills for a, you know, toothache, giving two. Because I know, you know, when my mom had some work done on her too, she did. She got a thing full of Percocets, and she took one and was sick from it and said, "Now I'm not taking any more," which is fine, and that's kind of what they're supposed to do. But she didn't need all of them. She ended up throwing away or disposing of at one of the pill centers. We have one in Marshfield, actually. The whole bottle.
So we're going to have to treat this a lot more carefully going forward with those kinds of things, drop-off points and smaller doses, smaller numbers of pills being prescribed. But the other thing is, let's not forget, is how easy it is for people who have become addicted to go on to now this very cheap and way too plentiful heroin.
Right.
So
another
aspect of, in my view, coming together as six states is to cut down on the heroin smuggling that's coming into our states.
Where does this issue, I mean, there's so many issues with the office that you're running for.
Mm-hmm.
Where does this issue, would you say, where does it kind of stack up against the others when it comes to, you know, you guys sitting down and having a debate? I'm sure there's going to be an upcoming, is there any debates scheduled yet for the group of yous,
we've got a bunch of forums. I guess I wouldn't call them head-on-head debates yet, but that'll happen before June, I'm sure. Well, for me, it's a very high priority issue. I don't know. You know, I've been running into it all year, and I certainly know that we have to do things radically different. I think the others are sympathetic with this issue, but they don't seem to have been as aggressive about it as I have. For me, it's a high priority. I think we're all dealing with the fact, almost as Mayor Carpenter said earlier. That there is a cycle here. Things are interrelated. We need jobs, and we need to improve our education to get jobs. Those things are pretty fundamental to making these cities better, including cities like Brockton. But right there along with it, as far as I'm concerned, is the addiction problem. Because until we do things very differently, we still are going to be sitting with this huge health epidemic that
it's going to stop us. And it comes back to, I think, the fundamental root, especially you mentioned the city of Brockton, that they're dealing with, which is the crime. Yep. And the addiction. I forget if it was yourself or the mayor that mentioned that 80% to 90% of property crimes are out of
addiction.
Yeah, and I think that really stood out as something that, like you said, if we don't address, and I think it will become a bigger issue.
But smaller communities, I think smaller communities, you can't just look at Brockton and go, well,
he's an urban
community that's dealing with it. It's throw the urban and suburban out. It's
lots of communities.
Yeah. Lots of communities.
Pembroke now dealing with it,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what I was just going to say is the fact that, you know, like with the gubernatorial campaign, for example, you know, if this issue doesn't take precedent, and I'm sure it will because you'll bring it up in the forums and debates and whatnot, but if it doesn't start to take a more of a serious stance now or presence now, you know, we're going to be dealing with this issue in just the same capacity, you know, several years down the road.
Yeah, I would like to speak to that because it's very easy to take this issue and put it in the back of your mind again because it's hard. And also it affects lots of feelings and we have this stigma that we still associate with it. So I think we're at a tipping point and certainly I'm going to keep pressing it. But I think no matter what happens to me, I think we need to continue to press it now because I think we're at a point where we really could start to change behaviors and the politics of it.
Well, I think, and when you look at communities on the South Shore, for example, these smaller communities that kind of, I think a lot of people unfortunately turn their heads to the fact that it's not happening. How could this, you know, parents, for example, at a high school, local high school, maybe on the South Shore, maybe saying this can't be happening in my school, this can't be happening in my community, when in fact we're seeing, for better or for worse, in the paper, you know, more and more attention being brought to the fact that there are these overdoses and the heroin is a bigger issue. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about these soft drugs that parents may have been able to turn their heads a little bit easier towards in the past.
This isn't 1979.
Yeah.
This isn't 1985.
No.
The drugs of that era have been far exceeded.
Well, absolutely. And I think what brings it home for me after talking to lots of people around the state is there's an organization called Learn to Cope. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Joanne Peterson.
From Joanne from here right in Raynham. She is, and her whole organization is incredible. And, you know, there are about 5,000 members, and I think now they have about 11 groups around the state that meet weekly. And if you go to any of those meetings, and I've gone to one, and see people who are new, who's, you know, children now, and really they are children. I mean, they're teenagers now. It's been apparent that they are now our addicts, and they're trying to figure out how to get them in treatment. Or people who are dealing with, you know, multiple failures of trying to get their loved ones the right treatment or have them stay sober. You realize how much this is really cutting across lots of middle-class families and people really of all backgrounds.
Mm. Is there something we haven't asked you, or is there a particular part of this problem or issue that you'd like to address that maybe we might have overlooked asking you?
Well, I think the stigma thing, which seems like the softest issue of all, actually drives a lot of the potential for change. Because we could, the governor needs to have it as a bully pulpit issue, something he's, but the legislature has to be comfortable with it. They've got to realize it's not just tinkering around the edges; it's actually dealing with something pretty differently. And for me, I think that's going to take all of us saying many, many times over that this is a health issue. We now know it. It's a health issue. And I think that's the hardest part. Mm. It seems like it might be the softest part. It's actually the hardest part. Then everything else is possible.
Talk to us about creating an Office of Recovery. What is that?
What does that mean?
Please share that if folks are just tuning in.
Sure. So it would establish an office in Health and Human Services called the Office of Recovery that is dedicated to dealing with addiction services. And it would take our current Bureau of Addiction, Department of Addiction Services or Substance Abuse, which is in the Public Health Department, and elevate it and put it in this larger entity.
Give it its own kind of area and maybe its own budget.
And own budget and higher level. And it will be, because it's partially...
You make it a priority.
Yeah, it's a higher priority, and it partially is involved with actually treatment as opposed to, you know, typical public health campaigns and education. It is that, but it's more. So it needs to be higher up. It needs to be a bigger department. And in addition to creating more capacity and the other things we talked about, we also need to, as part of this, establish a whole series of regional coordination centers that in which that it would be very widely known that with one number you call your local center and you know, and they get you right into treatment. Because what happens now is nobody knows where to go for treatment.
Mm. I was just going to say, you see the commercials on TV for places in Florida and California, and you never hear about the places that are that could be right in our backyard.
Now, admittedly, we don't have enough capacity, and we'll fix that, but then people have to know how to get into it. Right now, you hear families who have no idea, and you know, with the phone calls they fumble around and make, they keep getting turned down, and they get advice that they should civilly commit their child, because at least that'll find a way to get them in treatment.
Yeah, because that'll fight the demons.
Yeah, exactly.
That'll do it every time.
Yeah. So this is not the way to go. We can do better. So we're going to have I'm going to have a whole series of regional coordination centers, and we're actually going to staff them with people in recovery. People in recovery understand that when somebody's ready for treatment, that they quickly got to get them there. And this is what I'm going to do.
More or less, they speak the language of what's going on.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anything you want to share with us before we let you go? I mean, thank you for at least isolating this one platform or this one area of your platform for running for governor that you want to kind of touch upon before we let you go.
Well, I really appreciate you spending the time on this. It continues.
Thank you, campaign. They've been great to us.
Yeah, well, I will. Thank you. I would say that the youth crime, it is very related to the drugs, as we just talked about. And as the mayor was saying, it's also related to the fact that we've underfunded a lot of the things that we know worked. Mm. Summer youth programs, community policing, he mentioned some of them.
Yep.
And as the revenues start to increase in the state budget, the local aid has to go back up. And when I think it has to go back up more than it was in the governor's proposal. And as it starts to go back up, we need to put these things back that we know have helped with youth violence in the past.
Folks want to find out more about your campaign, they want to get involved, how can they do that?
Thank you. I would love them to go to avalonforgovernor.com or Avalon for Governor Facebook, and there's also telephone numbers there to give us a call.
We're on Twitter.
We're on Twitter. We are on Twitter as well. But we'd love to talk to them anytime, they could just email us at the campaign. But go to avalonforgovernor.com.
There he is, Joe Avalone, running for governor, Democrat for Democratic gubernatorial candidate. Thank you so much for coming in. We will step aside for a few moments. When we come back, we will speak with Dr. Kate Roberts. Do not go anywhere. You're listening to Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.